The primary election is almost here. Vote centers will be open May 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Make your vote count. Visit vote.indy.gov for more information. This message was paid for by the Marion County Election Board.
Draft week is here, and we are back. Another edition of Kevin's Corner. Hell, this might be some people's favorite week of the NFL calendar. A lot to get to on this week's Kevin's Corner. Get Chris Ballard's pre-draft presser. I thought several interesting comments from Ballard in regards to draft and just the offseason as a whole, so we'll get into that. Always love to do this exercise each year of draft scenarios. Got four draft scenarios we're going to look at today for the first three rounds for the Colts. So we'll take a deep dive into that. I'll probably post my official mock draft either Tuesday or Wednesday up to 107.5thefan.com. So last year, very fortunate to get three of the Colts picks right. That was a borderline miracle with Anthony Richardson, Blake Freeland, and Evan Hall. So going to guess that does not happen this year, but we'll try to get into that. And Twitter questions. And I think that covers everything. Eddie Garrison, how you doing?
Good. You forgot about Matt Miller. Dropped that interview from last Thursday on your show.
Thank you. Yes, ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller. We had him on, as Eddie said, last Thursday. So find that to be pretty timely. So we will play that for you here coming up in a little. Should we get right into Ballard and the takeaways there?
Yes, sir. Let's do it. Overall, what'd you think?
Yeah, you know, I guess let's kind of break it down into draft-related stuff and non-draft-related stuff. And I'll start non-draft-related. You know, my biggest question for Ballard was why the change of heart might be too much of a phrase, but, you know, in January it was, you know, put blame on me for finishing 28th in points allowed defensively each of the last 2 years. You know, I'm going to fall on the, you know, Gus Bradley sword, if you will, for the issues. But, you know, when I heard that, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to do some things from a, you know, roster move standpoint to try and enhance that. And again, kind of raise the floor to that. We obviously have not seen that happen here, as now we are several, I guess, a month, month and a half into the offseason. So my question was why? And, you know, I found it interesting, kind of the rationale behind it. You know, basically, to sum it up, he feels like the group played better than a lot of people think it did. Feels like the young nature to that group will now, you know, grow and develop here in year two, or however you want to describe some of the young developmental stages for those guys. And then he compared it to the offensive line from 2022 into 2023. And, you know, Ballard was really spot on with that O-line. You know, he felt like amidst all that just ugliness of a 4-12 soap opera-filled 2022 season, he felt like the O-line took some strides late in the year, were playing better football. Obviously, Bernard Raimann kind of settled in a little bit at left tackle. And they bounced back in a big way this past season with Tony Sperano Jr. I don't think that analogy, though, makes a whole lot of sense for me in comparing that to this current iteration of the secondary. First off, just look at track record, history, draft pick investment, really all of those things in regards to that O-line. You know, over half of that group has been together really since 2018. And Quentin Nelson's been a perennial Pro Bowler. Ryan Kelly has played, certainly, you know, Pro Bowl caliber football. I'd argue Braden Smith has played that at times. And you just don't have that in the secondary outside of Kenny Moore at all, really. That is something like that I don't necessarily think checks out really at all. And again, just look at where they're drafted. You know, Kelly, Nelson, and Braden, all top 40 picks. You know, outside of Juju, you really don't have a ton of draft pick investment. Yeah, or I should say kind of top two round draft pick investment. So, and you know, when asked specifically about the personnel and kind of go and run it back, I mean, the first name he mentions is Dallas Flowers. I mean, that is a lot to be banking on a torn Achilles from October at a position like corner. So, yeah, I can't go there. And that comparison applying here to the secondary. And I guess if you want to take it a step further, the O-line brought in Tony Sperano Jr. How big of a change did he make? You know, you were running it back really with the same D coordinator, the same, you know, DB coach and Ron Miles. So, yeah, that one did not check out for me really at all. I think that was probably the biggest thing non-draft related. You know, Drew Ogletree's back with the team, off the commissioner's exempt list. Flexibility was the name of the game for the DeForest Buckner restructure, or I should say extension there.
I thought it was Twitter.
He did mention Twitter. Twitter was a buzz, right?
Oh, yeah. He just wanted to see how Twitter would blow up with it.
Yes, that was it. That was it. And then finally, I'm like, wait, we probably need to get an answer on the record here. You know, I thought draft-wise would sit out, Eddie, is 19 to 21 guys with first-round grades. I find that particularly interesting because you sit there at 15. If you want to play out the hypothetical that come Thursday night, the first 14 picks are 14 first-round graded players for the Colts. That would then leave you 5 to 7 guys at 15. Do you then view that as try and trade back to 19 or 20, still get one of those first-round graded guys, and then get a third rounder or a second rounder, you know, something along those lines? You know, that is so Ballard precedent. One of our draft scenarios today will kind of play out that theme. And remember, the Colts only have 7 picks entering this draft. That's a very small Ballard number. You know, Ballard mentioned it on Friday. Historical data points to the more darts at the board, that's the route you want to try and go down. So I thought his answer on draft philosophy was interesting. Bob Kravitz asked him a really good question about, you know, what do you feel like has changed for you when it comes to the draft? And, you know, he mentioned a little bit of like kind of marrying the we want unique traits, but what has also changed for you from a you know, film substance, I think was a phrase that he used, you know, making sure that you find a little bit of that as well. I do think that kind of makes sense of just not RAS score, and that's it. You know, there has to be, you know, some stuff on tape that you really, really like from that angle too. And then, you know, wide out and O-line, Eddie. Those are the two positions he really, really likes. You know, he mentioned specifically kind of middle rounds for the O-line. You know, finding a center of the future checks out to me. I would not be drafting an O-lineman in the first 3 rounds. That's just not where I think it is.
Even though he was very outwardly spoken on the depth there?
Yeah, I would not. You know, again, he might, knowing him, you know, how many times did he talk about Richardson and support for him and mention specifically, you know, protecting Anthony first and foremost. So, you know, again, if you look at the O-line, Eddie, you know, 2025, you have Will Fries and you have Ryan Kelly as free agents. Outside of that, you know, Braden Smith in 2026, there's just not a ton there that you have. So I just don't see the immediate need. If I'm not mistaken, I think you bring back every single offensive line snap from last season. You know, so depth-wise, it's not like, you know, you are missing pieces there. So, and if you can find, you know, if this is a O-line draft that has round 4 guys you take in round 2, then wait till round 4. I'm fine with doing that. And again, every O-line, I think you look at around the league, you've got some middle to late round guys that become starters. I mean, the Colts, I guess, have one in Will Fries. So that is where I would probably go. Anything else stand out to you, Eddie, from a Ballard-related comment standpoint?
I think the Ogletree comment, I think, is a little bit of both of non-draft and draft, because I think of it this way. If they're comfortable with him after, you know, they did their research into the situation and the charges being dismissed and the NFL removing him off the exempt list, and they're very high on Jelani Woods, to me, that just tells me I don't think Brock Bowers is going to be an option or a selection there for them at 15, even if he is on the board, just because then you have a lot of tight ends, and I don't know what the value for one of those would be if you wanted to get rid of him. Certainly you diminished the value of any tight end if you selected Bowers, and you're not going to get potentially the return on investment that you would hope to get. So To me, that's where I would stand on that.
Yeah, tight end is going to be so interesting to see how they attack that position, if they do it at all. You know, again, they've drafted ones rounds 3 through 6, four of them, if you look at it over the past few drafts. But, you know, I still think Bowers is a really unique weapon compared to the rest of your tight ends. Mo'Ali Cox is a free agent next year if you retain him. Yeah, that one, again, back in the building, participating in the offseason program, off the commissioner's exempt list. That's probably everything. He kind of confirmed, and you'll hear Matt Miller say this when he joins us here in a little bit from that interview from our morning show the other week. You know, he expects a lot of offensive players to go early in this draft. And try to preface it by saying he just thinks it's a great offensive draft at the top, not necessarily, you know, super defensive. You know, it's, you know, super poor defensively, so that contributing to it. So, unless you've got something else, I thought that was everything Ballard related. I mean, he was adamant about you got to protect Anthony. That was the thing he would mention first. Yeah, you want to add some playmakers around him, but still, it was you've got to protect him. So we know Ballard's history with O-line. I mean, he is bullish on it. He brought up a story about, you know, Andrew Luck kind of said to him, hey man, just protect me and I'll figure it out. I think with Anthony it's a little different because, you know, if you look at Anthony's injuries, all of them, if I'm not mistaken, all of them occurred outside of the pocket from last season. So that's design runs, that's scrambles, you know, things like that. So, you know, the whole protecting Anthony Richardson, there's just another element to his game that's different than a lot of guys. When it comes to that, you know, you can look at the Luck injuries and the lacerated kidney occurred on a scramble. The shoulder injury began in the pocket play. So certainly injuries obviously happen in pocket, but still there is just even more of a degree to that run, exposing them, risking some stuff in the open field, et cetera, et cetera.
Could protecting him mean by giving him another option? So he doesn't have to put himself in those situations?
Yeah, I just didn't... I hear you out. I didn't read that into the Ballard definition of protecting him. I think he meant physical offensive line protection and not, you know, to your point. Which, you know, Ballard brought up how, you know, you can get some of these explosive plays off scrambles. Mm-hmm. And you certainly can. I mean, you watch any game, and the ability to extend a play leads to so much from an off-script explosion standpoint. I agree with that, but I also think you don't have to solely bank on that. You know, you can help your quarterback out and help your offense out in general by making sure that these individual players have an ability to try and make something happen post-catch. And, you know, you can, whatever, catch a ball, break a tackle, and boom, go. We got an article up on 1075thefan.com that details, you know, my biggest takeaways from the Ballard presser, which, again, was last Friday.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Not too often we get to talk about a fresh post article from you on 1075thefan.com, but we get to do that today. Analyzing Colts draft scenarios, if my count is correct, you list out 5 of them. Or
four.
Four.
Four. Uh-huh.
That's why I said I can't count. Well, let's start with scenario A. We'll go 1 through 4. Number 1 for you. At pick 15, you have the Colts selecting cornerback Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. At number 46 in the second round, wide receiver Troy Franklin out of Oregon. And at number 82, defensive end Chris Braswell from Alabama.
So again, 15, 46, 82. Those are the first three picks the Colts have right now, rounds 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, this scenario to me is probably the one that you've seen kind of most common of just you're crossing off the biggest need on each side of the ball with the first two picks. And then, you know, if you go back to Ballard's presser at the start of the year, start of the offseason, you know, we have a focus on limiting explosive plays. Well, in Mitchell, you would hope that you're doing that. In Braswell, you hope you have somebody that could grow into that, and then you want to create more explosive plays on your end. And Troy Franklin did that at Oregon with, you know, over 17 yards per catch, and, you know, he led the Pac-12 in touchdowns. So this falls back in line with the Ballard explosive comment at the end of the season. We need to get more explosive, and we need to stop more of those explosive plays. So that's what you see here with this. You know, obviously Mitchell's been, you know, probably the most popular name mocked to the Colts. Again, it's an immediate need. You'd have questions about a rookie stepping in and contributing from day one, but you're going to have that inevitably with anybody. You know, and then Braswell had something that I think Ballard does covet, and that, you know, it's a very quick first step. That's always been a big kind of staple of what Ballard's looking for, especially off the edge, with any defensive lineman, but especially off the edge. So, yes, a Mitchell Franklin Braswell scenario here.
Does the size of Troy Franklin concern you at all?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, that's part of what you're going to get with some of these speed guys. I mean, Xavier Worthy falls into the same boat. You're going to get a little bit more of a slender frame. And that's why I get back to the yards after catch guys, Eddie. They're mm-hmm. all different shapes and sizes.
Yeah.
Like, look at Malachi Corley. I mean, he's different. I mean, he's built a little bit more like Deebo Samuel.
Yeah.
You know, thicker and, you know, able to kind of run through guys. So, to me, it's kind of flavor of what you want. And, you know, Worthy in particular, you know, he's a guy that was really durable at Texas, which, you know, you have questions about a 160-pound guy being that. So, no, that's a totally fair question.
I was just trying to look at some of the, you know, top receivers last year, and I don't think anyone inside the top 20 outside of Devonta Smith was under 200 pounds.
What about Tyreek Hill?
He was listed at 205.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Or 191, sorry. Yeah, so there you go, two.
Yeah. So, and again, that goes you back, you know, goes back to the NFL precedent, and, you know, that's where you got to sit down with Shane Steichen and say, all right, what are you going to do with him? How are you going to utilize them? How are you going to keep them in space, et cetera, et cetera?
Scenario B, a.k.a. scenario number two, at pick 15, selecting wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU at 46, cornerback Max Melton out of Rutgers, and at pick number 82, Dadrian Taylor-Demerson, Texas Tech safety.
Yeah, this is probably your, again, you can debate what that third need is. I think a lot of people would say corner, would say wide out, and then I think most people would say safety. So this would be a, you are crossing off the top three needs. You know, these are the positions that the Colts probably have the most questions on, so here's picks going to all of them. You know, again, I am not this one that thinks pass catcher is off the table at 15.
I'm not either.
I'm not. Now, Brian Thomas Jr., I thought Adam Schefter had a report today. He's got a torn labrum. That's something that I don't think has been discussed a lot during the draft process. You know, this is your tall, this is your speed, and this is, you know, plenty of over-the-top tracking ability. He did at LSU, another 17-touchdown guy last year and leading all of college football. You know, Melton is a different type of corner. Think a little bit more of a feisty slot guy, ton of ball production. Doesn't have the height that Ballard loves, but he does have the wingspan, which, again, I think can kind of make up for that, a la Kenny Moore. Taylor-Demerson as well, not a big height guy, but he can fly and also had some ball production, which, again, is a key element to what Chris Bowers is looking for in the secondary. And I think we have to remind myself at times, Eddie, with these safety needs, you know, Julian Blackmon is just back on a one-year deal. And Blackmon gave every indication, like, he's going to be looking for a big-time contract, I would think, next year. So even if he has a good year, I don't think retaining him is a slam dunk. So how do you kind of view safety there? So again, this crosses off the three need list.
Brian Thomas Jr. to me is a fascinating case study in terms of where you see him go in mock drafts, because you see him as early as 15 to the Colts, but you also see him as late as like 22. Like, there doesn't seem to be like a sweet spot. It looks to be like around the middle of the first round to probably, you know, pick 20 to 24.
Where is the fourth wideout? Who is the fourth wideout and where does he go? You know, if you think it's Harrison Jr., Neighbors, and Adunze all in the top, whatever, 8, mm-hmm. 10, however you want to label it, where's the fourth one? So, yeah, that one to me is really interesting.
After two scenarios where you have the Colts staying put, you have one scenario with them trading up and one scenario with them trading down. We will start with trading up for scenario number three. So you have the Colts only with two selections in the first three rounds in this one. And number eight, you have them trading up to select Malik Neighbors, wide receiver out of LSU. And then at number 82, quarterback Kamari Lassiter from Georgia.
I know the math might not be perfect, but let's say they give up their second rounder for that trade, and that means, again, only one pick in the top 80. I mean, two in the top 100 and, what, 10 or 15. That is so Chris Bauer foreign. So foreign. But this is your direct support for Anthony Richardson in a massive, massive way. Neighbors has the speed and explosion, and you talk about a jolt for the passing your pass-catching group. I mean, that is exactly what you would be getting here with Neighbors. I did find it interesting Ballard brought up the Georgia defender during the presser over the weekend. So there's clearly some Georgia defender that he, you know, feels pretty good about. You know, is that Lassiter? Is it, you know, Javon Bullard? You know, who exactly is that? And again, this is coming back in the third round, and I don't think corner is known as a super deep position in this draft class, but still, you would be taking a chance on another corner in this area. But this scenario to me, Eddie, it's all, you know, defined about Neighbors. You know, it's just Neighbors, Neighbors, Neighbors. And ultimately, you would look back on this draft, and that's how you'd be judged. And I think that's a debate sometimes you can get into of, you know, kind of evaluating drafts. You know, for the most part, you grade drafts of who are the top two or three players at that in that year's draft class. Not the, oh, man, they've got six or seven guys on their 53-man roster. Well, I mean, there's a roster, a lot of turnover at the back end of rosters. That, to me, maybe isn't as true of an indicator of how successful the draft is than finding those couple of guys that are really, really up there. So, again, I don't think this is something Ballard would do. Again, it takes two to tango, you know, within striking distance of that. You know, there's a couple off-the-field questions about Neighbors, but this would be juicy. This would be the direct support for your young quarterback.
I know some people may laugh when I ask this question and may laugh when we're talking about, you know, Chris Ballard trading up. You look at the extension and the restructuring of DeForest Buckner opens up to about $28 million. You know, Ballard likes to have about $10 million for the draft pool. When you factor all that together, could that restructure and flexibility of that additional whatever, I can't remember the exact number, but having that much money in the bank post-draft, could that be a reasoning as to why them trading up and then you've got some extra money to fill out the back half of the roster?
You could look at it that way. You could also look at it as you would be paying the eighth pick a little bit more than the 15th pick.
Yep.
So you would want a little bit more money, you know, on the front end of that as well. So, yeah, you could look at it a couple ways. I think that's a good, you know, good point. And I'll reiterate what I said last Wednesday because the Buckner news had just broken when we chatted on last week's podcast. I am totally good with adding flexibility to your situation. You know, you just, there's 31 other teams.
Mm-hmm.
31 other teams. You have no idea what their exact blueprint looks like or what they could be doing. Did, you know, 3 years ago on Monday of draft week, did we think A.J. Brown was going to be on the move?
I don't think so.
Watch Mike Vrabel's reaction in that war room when it unfolded. Clearly, either he did not or he was, you know, not happy about it at all, and probably both of that. So that's where I think you just keep all options open. You can answer the phone. You know, a lot of times you can't answer all the calls or you can't seriously entertain them. Here, you can.
Final scenario is the trade down scenario. And of course, you can't have a mock draft scenario without one Notre Dame player going to the Indianapolis Colts. In this one, you have the Colts trading back from 15 to 22 with the Eagles and also picking up the 53rd pick from Philly in this said trade back scenario. So pick number 22 from the Eagles, you have the Colts selecting defensive back Cooper DeHaan from Iowa at number 46, wide receiver Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky at 53 from the Eagles, linebacker Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M, and at 82, Blake Fisher, offensive tackle from your favorite school in the history of schools.
And an Avon product, if you want to throw that in there. You know, this just screams so Ballard. You know, you have seven picks. You know, he loves getting the additional one on day two. You know, that's always been a big sweet spot for him, is that second and third round. This would be that. You're kind of checking off some needs. You're relying on the depth of the offensive line group. You're relying on, you know, yards after catching a guy like Malachi Corley. You know, Cooper Jean, again, super unique defensive chess piece. Got to be very enticing. You know, when you talk about how pass happy some of these leagues are. You know, linebacker, some would say, hey, that's too early. I mean, EJ Speed's in a contract here. I don't think you got great depth there. So that would be, okay, are you kind of turning it over at some point? Who's your third linebacker? I think is a major question entering this year. And, you know, in Fisher's case, it's, you know, another pretty athletic offensive tackle that had a lot of hype going into Notre Dame, started as a true freshman, but then just didn't, you know, battled some injuries freshman year. And then, you know, I don't know, Joe Alt obviously stole all the attention, but just didn't, you know, live up to maybe all of the five-star hype that comes with it there. So, you know, this is one that it takes two to tango. You go back to 19 to 21 guys with first-round grades. You know, do you see the board fall on Thursday night and all of a sudden you feel good about trading back? Yeah, this one screams Ballard. It does. And again, I understand, you know, people have asked me before. Like, I understand his, you want as many darts at the board. Like, the draft can be a crapshoot. And, I mean, hell, look at even the great drafts that teams have had. You've got players that are drafted, you know, really, really high that don't pan out for whatever reason. Money, fame, attention, work ethic, fit, motivation factor, all those things. But I think the counter to that is, you know, when you find a player, you see a player around you that you really, really like, the ability to make sure you get that guy, you go up and kind of pounce on that. That's what I think you are missing there. So, again, four scenarios, laid them out up on 107.5thefan.com as we get closer to draft night.
Before we get to Matt Miller, when you look at Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, does Arnold make you salivate more because he's from Alabama, so he has the SEC experience along with the fact that he has the ability to kind of move all over the field because he has
it's that
experience
part. Yeah.
Inside and outside?
Yeah, it's that second part, Eddie. It is the versatility. Do we have a shadow guy, a potential shadow guy? You know, you see it so often, teams moving their studs into the slot to try and get them whatever free releases or linebacker or safety on them, et cetera, et cetera. You know, can you try and evolve as a defense and have a weapon? You know, you can make the case they haven't felt like they have that, have had that at corner in quite some time. Can you do that? That's how I view that potential pick there.
Now, what about Quinyon Mitchell? What do you like about him?
I think it's a little bit more of the outside guy. You know, obviously it was great the Senior Bowl. You know, he's taller than Arnold, you know, and he's faster than Arnold. You know, you can get into a little bit of that of a difference. Now, again, I think Arnold has got some wingspan and some short area quickness that is intriguing to me. I really like Arnold. Honestly, I do. I'm a big fan. That's probably where I'm going to lean in that mock draft when I post it to 107.5thefan.com. But I understand the appeal with Mitchell as well, certainly.
To me, when I look at the two, I think Arnold is a lot better in terms of press coverage, and with the Colts not really running a lot of press coverage, I think they would probably lean more towards Quinyon Mitchell just because they don't, like I just said, they don't run a lot of press. So if Terrion Arnold is best suited or at his best when he's in press, then to me you're taking him out of what he does best if he's in a zone defensive scheme.
No, I think that's a really good point. Again, you're projecting guys to your own system.
Yeah.
So that is something that you have to keep in mind.
If you have anything else to add here, you want to get into Matt Miller?
Let's do it.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Okay, so your conversation with Matt Miller starts off from last Thursday. You ask him about where he will be on Thursday for draft day in Detroit.
1 week from tonight, I will be in Detroit. So my job on day one and day two is basically to keep the great Mel Kiper as fresh as humanly possible for rounds one, two, and three. So I'll be doing SportsCenter, Get Up, NFL Live. I think I'm on SportsCenter like right up until the moment that the Chicago Bears go on the clock. So I'll be in Detroit running from the set to my hotel room. And as soon as the picks are made, I'll be pounding out like draft analysis for ESPN.com on nights one and two.
I love it. Your first big domino is where in the top 10?
3. I think the New England Patriots at 3 are more of a domino than we've been led to believe. I've kind of been pounding the table for the last month about they at least have to pick up the phone or answer the call even. When teams are calling up to trade up, I think if you're New England, I look at all these teams in Chicago, Minnesota, and even Washington that have set the table well for their young quarterback. I don't feel like New England has done that. So I think they at least have to entertain the call to trade out at 3. They could stick and pick. They could take Drake May. They could take J.J. McCarthy. I think that'd be a surprise. But I think New England is at least the first spot where, so at about 30 minutes into the draft, the first spot where I'll be curious to see exactly what they're going to do.
Matt Miller joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Before we dive into the Colts who pick at 15, and there's a lot of interesting things around that, Jane Daniels met with Washington on Monday, and his odds then completely flew off the board. He's now minus 300, minus 350 to go second overall. How did we get to the point to where he is now the consensus to go number 2 overall?
Yeah, I think you're getting to the point where you're talking to people around the league and they're all hearing that. They're all saying that. I don't know that anyone in Washington is saying that, or at least not from the front office. Maybe coaches, maybe ownership is starting to talk a little bit as why that's happening. Adam Peters comes from the San Francisco 49ers. You know, he was in lockstep with John Lynch there for a long time. And they famously were the do not leak front office, right? Like, we don't want anyone to know what we're doing. They were the team that we all thought they were going to take Mac Jones. They took Trey Lance. So I will say that with Adam Peters, he is from that old school mindset of don't let our plans out of the building. Now, that's not to say that, you know, I don't know that Dan Quinn's like calling folks in the media saying, hey, here's who we're drafting. But I think all the winds are blowing in that direction, and it certainly makes sense. You know, Jaden had such a great year. He fits what this team would like to do, you know, I think from a standpoint of Cliff Kingsbury and the type of offense he wants to run. I think with the defensive-minded head coach, you always ask yourself, which quarterback would you least like to play? And I think for me, that is Jaden Daniels in this class.
And Matt Miller, ESPN draft analyst, you're going to see him on day 3 coverage coming up a week from Saturday. He's with us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. Matt, let's move to the Colts at 15. Brock Bowers is available. Brian Thomas Jr. is available. And let's say Quinion Mitchell is available as well. You're Chris Ballard. You go where?
Oh, my goodness. That's tough. I actually think I go Quinion Mitchell in that scenario. And I know it might be a surprise to fans who you hear about Brock Bowers. He's a top 10 player for almost everyone. But I think it's harder to find a number one corner than it is to find a number one tight end. And I think the value of a number one corner is more valuable than a number one tight end. So I look at it, I would go Quinion Mitchell. I think the tight end depth is better than the corner depth as well. It's like I look at the corner class, Quinion Mitchell, I have him as the number 2 corner, but he's right behind Terrion Arnold, from Alabama. In round 2, I've got corners rated in round 2, but they're all like they're inside guys. You know, it's like Mike Sainristil, inside guy. Max Melton, he could play on the outside, but doesn't have the ceiling of a Quinion Mitchell. TJ Tampa doesn't have that ceiling. When I'm looking at round 2 tight ends, like I think I'd rather come out of this draft with Quinion Mitchell and JT Sanders than I would coming out of strap with Brock Bowers and TJ Tampa. Like, so when I think about how I could stack the board right to this team, maybe I'm holding out hope here. Like, I was always a huge fan of Jelani Woods when he was in college, and maybe I'm just holding out hope selfishly here that he's going to become that guy. But I don't look at this tight end room and see, oh my God, they have to get a starting tight end here. I don't see that. Like, it would be nice, but it does feel like a luxury. Whereas, you know, you got corners, Juju Brent, second round last year, Dallas Flowers, who went to college like 30 minutes from where I live at Pitt State. I like those guys. Kenny Moore is obviously a great, great nickel player, but I think the need at corner is much bigger than the need at tight end.
Is that the Gorillas of Pittsburgh State?
It is the Gorillas.
Yeah. Shout out to Dallas Flowers coming off the torn Achilles.
Look at you knowing that. Matt Miller with us here, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, ESPN.com. Listen, ultimately, none of us know exactly what's going to happen with trades and everything else, and there'll always be a couple picks that will be off the board. But your hunch, if the Colts stay at 15, do you think they get the first corner, or do you think someone goes before them and they have the option to get the second or third guy there? How do you think that works out?
I think that, man, that is a great question. And I've been trying to run that scenario of, like, where does the first corner go? And it's hard to find that team without a trade back. Like, if the Chargers trade back from 5 to 11, they could take a corner. Their corners are pretty bad. Denver could take a corner at 12 if they don't make a move for a quarterback. So finding that first corner, you're almost always in that scenario of, well, if this doesn't happen, this could happen. So Indy is kind of that sweet spot for the first corner. I think you have to look at Denver as a team that could do it as well. The Raiders need a tackle so bad. Like, the Raiders could certainly go corner, but you very, very well could be that team that, hey, first corner off the board, whether that be Arnold or Mitchell. It's kind of a, you know, preference of scheme fit at that point, but the Colts are right there. Again, if we see some teams go tackle like Denver, like the Raiders, then you're starting to watch those corners fall down the board.
At NFL Draft Scout on Twitter, Matt Miller spent last night watching the Royals and White Sox on TV. Oh. So pray for his
God bless
sanity there with that. Royals
fan. I thought
we
were talking MLB draft. You know, MLB draft. I was ready to go.
Yeah, I know you've been watching a lot of SEC starters on a Friday night here. To mention with all the SEC talent, NFL wise. Okay, Matt. When we go to bed a week from now, tonight, when we go to bed Thursday night, will Michael Penix's name been called yet?
I don't think so. And like, you do hear like that he could go in the top half of the draft, but you hear that more from media people than NFL people. I haven't spoken to one team that thinks that he's going to go in the top half of the draft. Now, I hope he does. I really do. Like, I think you root for every player, you know, to go early. That would be fantastic for him. But as of right now, I have not found a team who says, hey, we like him up here. I think everyone kind of assumes the Raiders might do it, but 13 feels really early for me. And I think it's more likely that we would see the Raiders try to come back in late first round to make that pick as opposed to doing it at 13.
Matt, obviously it's mock draft season. I thought it was a really cool idea and execution by you to do the scouts predict the top 10 picks. You reached out to scouts from around the league and they made the selections 1 through 10. I thought just one thing that stood out to me was Quinion Mitchell, because he's been a popular name to the Colts. He was 8 with Raheem Morris to the Falcons there, and for what it's worth, it was an AFC South area scout who made that selection, as you pointed out in your story. Anything scout-related with that mock draft stand out to you with the top 10?
Yeah, you know, the fact that J.J. McCarthy didn't go in the top 10 really shocked me, and I think that goes to show that, you know, where J.J. is ranked versus where he's expected to be drafted are very different. You know, he is not a player that you talk to teams and they're saying, like, yeah, this is a top 10 player. That does not happen. It's more so, well, this team needs a quarterback, so, you know, he's going to get forced into the top 10. It's certainly much more that case than the other of where he's, you know, actually ranked and expected to go. I look at Byron Murphy from Texas. The scouts had him going 9 overall to the Chicago Bears. That one actually makes a lot of sense to me. I love Byron Murphy. I think he's my number 12 overall player. I'm a huge fan of his. And you look at Chicago, if the receivers are off the board, then it does kind of make sense that Chicago could go with an interior defender. The value of those guys are only continuing to go up. You know, we just saw a boatload of them get paid this offseason. So I do look at Chicago and say, okay, if the receivers are off the board and you don't trade back, take Byron Murphy. And Matt Eberflus's defense, you guys know Matt Eberflus's defense. You need that three technique. You need that interior pass rusher. And Murphy's the best one. And a draft class is pretty shallow at the three technique position.
Matt Miller joining us here on the Payless Liquors Hotline. You can check him day 3 of the draft. A ton of stuff on TV, radio, ESPN.com. He's their NFL draft analyst. You know, it's an odd question, but so a couple weeks ago, there was kind of a report about Malik Nabers, the wide receiver from LSU. Maybe he was a high maintenance guy, you know, guys in the NFL had talked about that. And I don't think he's going to get to 15. We've had the conversation if he or others would drop, if Ballard would move up. Nabers did come out a couple weekends ago, though, Matt, and, you know, basically said, you know, they got to pick on someone in the draft process. And I guess this year, it's going to be me, but I haven't seen anything else in the last couple weeks on that. So what do you think about those reports a couple weeks ago? Anything with Nabers that would that you would worry about, or that you think he might, you know, fall in the draft coming up in a week?
And I think it is like it's natural this time of year for things to come out. I'm not saying they're manufactured. I think it's, you know, as teams get information on players, as teams talk to people like me in the media, these things do come out. Now, I'm not breaking news here. This is public record. You know, Neighbors was arrested on gun charges in 2023. The charges were dropped. I think it was something like on Bourbon Street, maybe, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm-hmm. So
it was.
You know, that comes out, and I think there are going to be people that rush to judgment on that and say, oh, red flag, off field. You know, charges were dropped. You know, certainly, you know, it's always it's something that you have to do your due diligence on, especially when it's something like a gun charge. You have to dig into that. I haven't heard from any teams that have said Malik Nabers is going to drop in the draft because of character, because of off field. I have not heard that. In fact, I've heard, you know, the opposite, that the closer we get to the draft, more teams do like him, you know, and that I reported this back at the Senior Bowl, that there were teams even back then who had him as the number one receiver. And I think that list of teams has only grown as people have dug into the tape. So, you know, Nabers, Odunze, Marvin Harrison Jr. are all incredibly talented. I think there is a legitimate debate about which one is the best. And I think if you talk to all 32 teams and they're honest, it might be split, you know, into thirds as to who the best one is in this class. So I don't think that's anything that we're going to see affect him a week from now. You know, he's still going to be selected very, very early in the top nine, definitely.
Matt, we got about 60 seconds left. We can't thank you enough for your time. This is probably asking you to predict a correct, perfect, 100% NCAA tournament bracket. If I give you one name for Mr. Irrelevant, you're on the stage, day three,
oh, wow.
ESPN.
I like it.
One name, the final pick of this year's NFL draft, Matt Miller.
Wow, let me go Imani Bailey, running back, Boise State.
Bailey,
that's a deep cut. I was not expecting to go there. That's good.
You had a name, Matt. That's impressive.
You had a name.
TCU.
And it wasn't a punter.
I went wrong college, though, TCU. I was thinking of a different running back. Imani Bailey from TCU. I'll go there.
You could have said Alabama or Pittsburgh State, and I would have believed you on that. Matt Miller, great stuff with ESPN. Again, he'll be on the TV coverage coming up a week from Saturday. Matt, always enjoy our conversations. Thanks for making time for us.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
All right, thank you to Matt Miller again. That is ESPN draft analyst. Always enjoy his energy and day three coverage, as you heard, coming up there for him. Eddie, should we do a couple of Twitter questions before we round it out?
Yeah, we don't have many today. Very light Twitter question section, only three. We will start with Blopaw. He says he does not really understand the logic of the sports press. Ballard is very structured as a general manager, so it shouldn't be that hard to read. Landing the issue, why do most journalists believe that Chris Ballard has to take a corner with the early picks? If it does not have the slightest logic, it is clear that the inexperience took its toll last season. But to think that adding more inexperience will fix the problem is unhinged. Clearly, DeForest Buckner's move is going to allow a veteran cornerback to be signed after the draft, which is the logical move as there are good prospects available. Greetings from Costa Rica.
Blopa, always good to hear from you. Appreciate the question there. Attacking the press from Costa Rica. I love that. From Blopa. I mean, I've said it a million times, but again, raising the floor of that secondary. You know, I do think that is where the veteran move is kind of where always that's where I was at. Now, at the same time, I can sit here and think to myself, do you feel like you have a number one outside corner? Like, do you feel like that is Juju Brents? Again, they haven't invested a lot of premium draft capital, you know, from a corner standpoint here, like on the roster. You know, Jalen Jones isn't really that. Dallas Flowers certainly isn't that. You know, obviously Darius Rush is no longer on the team. So I guess basically the question I'm at, are you good with Juju as your number one outside guy moving forward? Do you have the dominant number one shadow guy? Because if you don't, then that's where corner does come into play. But again, I think just raising the floor from a veteran standpoint is needed. I thought Joel Eriksson had such a great line when he used that there. So I'm not married to this corner at 15. I see all these mocks that have the Colts, you know, 15, 15, 15. And I get why you would have that on the need list. It is very, very high. But, you know, I understand where Blopa is coming from and that you do have a lot of youth in that room. But again, do you have the high end ceiling too? You know, do you feel like you have a lot of twos and threes? And maybe at 15, if you can get the number one corner in the draft, is that too good to pass up? And then again, rely on depth at other spots. Rely on the wide receiver depth. Rely on the offensive line depth if you view it in those eyes there. So, yeah, I see both sides of it, really.
I think you also have to look at, does Dallas Flowers deserve the opportunity to prove himself to be a reliable cornerback because of missing last season with the Achilles injury?
Yeah, I think he does deserve it, but it's just a lot. I mean, I heard Ballard's answer on Friday, and I'm like, man, he is really like, he's borderline banking on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's a lot for an Achilles at, and again, former undrafted free agent. It's not like this is your prize
correct
guy. Now, again, I liked a little bit of what I saw from Flowers at the start of last season, but still, boy, that's just a lot.
Two questions left, JJ and Benji. Benji's a little bit of a fun one, so we'll get to that one last. JJ says something, he brings up something that you've brought up a handful of times already on the podcast. He said James Boyd posted this quote from Ballard on X regarding a trade up or trade down scenario. I just go off of history. The more picks you have, the better chance you have to hit. Do you, Kevin, agree with this philosophy? As a general rule, would you prefer a higher pick or more lower picks?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it depends on where you're at from a roster standpoint. I get what Bauer is saying, but I think, you know, having some more conviction on a few specific guys at times to strike and kind of take those swings, especially at the premium positions, that would probably be where my difference lies when it comes to, you know, Ballard's treatment of the first couple of picks. But again, there's plenty of historical data out there to back up what Ballard is saying, and that, you know, it is a little bit of an element of quantity over quality. And you know what? He's really tried to make a living out of, you know, a lot of the second and third rounders. You know, that, I mean, there haven't been. I mean, how many first round picks has he made?
It's a good question.
Is it Hooker, Nelson, Pay, and Richardson?
Sounds about right, yeah.
So, you know, not even a lot there in round one. So, you know, obviously traded for Buckner, moved out.
And then selected Rock?
Yeah, and took Rock, you know, that, again, I mean, that's one where you look at it and you think, boy, you know, Montez Sweat, of course, had the medical question, but is that one where you viewed it as a kind of a time to pounce or be a little bit more aggressive? Again, take a swing, and you could kind of reap some of that there at the end.
Final Twitter question comes from Benji. Kevin, you got your notepad out for this one?
Ooh, okay. All right, tell
me more.
Because
we've got a list of things, and he would like you to order these in most likely to least likely to happen. First, Shaq Leonard makes a comeback with the Indianapolis Colts. Second, Chris Ballard drafts a wide receiver in the first round. Third, the Indiana Pacers win a Larry O'Brien trophy.
Whoa, hey now, I guess after yesterday, probably not.
Number four, Tiger Woods wins another Masters.
Come on.
And number five, Anthony Richardson receives a second contract with the Indianapolis Colts.
Boy, you want to talk about some creativity behind this one. Benji, you said?
Yes.
Outstanding. I love it. Okay, give those to me one more time.
Shaq Leonard returns. Chris Ballard selects a wide receiver in the first round. The Pacers win the NBA Finals. Tiger Woods wins another Masters. Anthony Richardson gets another contract with the Indianapolis Colts.
Now, I have to do this with my head or my heart?
It's a good question. I would say, let's go with both.
Well, Tiger. That's where I would be from a heart standpoint. All right, head here. Ballard going corner would be atop the list. I'd probably
wide receiver.
I'd probably put. Oh, is it wide out or is it corner?
Wide receiver. C.
Oh, okay. Got it. Ballard drafts a wide out. Yeah, I'd put that at one. I'd probably put Richardson's second contract a very close second. And then a massive drop off from there. I mean, massive.
Which one is number three?
I'd probably be a sucker for the retire as a Colt for a day with Leonard. Does Shaq Leonard play in the NFL again?
Boy, I don't know.
Currently a free agent, right?
Yes.
Then I would sadly go with Pacers and then Tiger.
Wow.
With my head. But I cannot stress enough how much drop-off there is from 1 and 2. Ballard drafting a wideout in round 1. Richardson getting the second contract to then Leonard.
How far is the drop-off from 4 to 5?
I mean, if you're making me go with my head, pretty significant. I don't know. Pacers in an NBA title seems a bit far-fetched as well.
I'd probably flip 1 and 2 personally.
The only reason I pause there is just like, is there some devastating injury?
Right. I can see that.
You know, again, you're still, what, probably 3 years away from a second contract?
But to me, it's also Chris Ballard and his willingness to say, hey, we can trade back and, you know, attack edge or the trench play or whatever the case may be. And I don't know if, and he's already talked about how, you know, deep the wide receiver class is in, like, not just this year, but like, in context of his tenure as the general manager, you talk about all these guys that come into the draft with production in college and the receivers are coming in more polished and more pro ready. So to me, I don't know. I always feel like there's a lot of options and he doesn't view as a first round as, you know, the priority to land one.
Yeah.
Even it probably should.
Yeah. That's a great one though. I mean, that is, Benji deserves a major hat tip for that.
What's your final prediction for Thursday's draft?
Yeah, I'll go Terry and Arnold. Again, not married to it, but yeah, that's where I will go. How about yourself?
I stand by it. Brian Thomas Jr., even though I just said I would put Anthony Richardson's second contract above Chris Ballard selecting a wide receiver.
Yeah, I think to me the big question is, you know, do you trade back? You know, do you go back to the 19 to 21 first round grades and do you trade back and get that additional piece? So cannot wait to recap all of it. We'll have all the coverage 1075thefan.com, and we'll come back with a big podcast here recapping the draft. He is Eddie Garrison. I'm Kevin Bowen. Everybody have a great week. Draft week is here.